Well, we have been going through the book of Luke together. As the bumper shows us, this week we're actually taking a little bit of a break from the book of Luke on our fifth Sunday, and we're going to be in Mark chapter 10 and verse 35 today. Every time we have a month with five Sundays, we do two very special things, or we have been doing two very special things, is first, we've been inviting our kids into the service. And I will say, it's more fun for me to get to teach and get to see some of our kids' faces dialed in. So we get to invite them. They're a valuable part of our gathering. I think sometimes we can forget how sweet it is to have our children be here for the whole service, so we get to do that. Larry Carlson reminded me last week, I don't know if Larry's in here, but he reminded me last week that children may be a small percentage of our total gathering today, but they're 100% of our future. And so we like having them in the service to get to be a part of the teaching and the lesson here today. On Fifth Sundays, we also get to focus on an aspect of our mission as Christians. So we've been doing that somewhat throughout the book of Luke in general, but on Fifth Sundays, it gives us a chance to reevaluate specifically what our mission is, and here our mission as servants. So kids, first, those kids who are in here, I'd like you to think about this, and adults, you can participate as well. Can you think about what it was, kids, that you want to be, or what it is for kids that you want to be when you get older? What do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to do? What profession do you want to have? Maybe adults, you had a profession that you wanted to be when you got older that you held to for a really long time. Now, there were several things I wanted to be. I wanted to be a sports star. That didn't work out for me. I'm not real fast. I can't jump real high, and those things don't lend itself towards being a sports star. But that was one thing. Another thing is sometimes I would preach to my parents and to anybody who would listen to me when I was around six or seven. And so I did get to do that, but sometimes they work out. Sometimes they don't want to be. But oftentimes kids want to be firefighters or police officers would be two that I had thought about. Maybe a singer who would sing on stage before audiences, or I know my daughters mentioned being a baker. Some people like to be would want to be like a veterinarian maybe, or a soldier. There could be many things that kids might want to be when they get older, but one thing that I've never gotten as a response when I've asked a kid, what do you want to be when you grow up? I've never gotten the response that they want to be a servant. It's not real high on people's pecking order. If I could just serve others for a living, that would be a really great life. And so many of us don't think that way, but I was struck when I was going through a study in 1 Corinthians a couple years ago, and I was struck by this verse in 1 Corinthians 4 in verses 1 and 2. It says, Paul says, "This is how one should regard us, as servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. Moreover, it's required of stewards that they be found faithful." And so Paul said that this is how one should regard us, is as servants of Jesus Christ. And so he was talking at this time in the midst of chapters about division and passing judgment on one another. And he said one should regard us as servants. The Apostle Paul could have been regarded as a hero of the faith, an apostle, right? He shares with us many of the different ways that he had thought of himself and was upheld. He was a learned man. He had studied at the feet of Gamaliel, and he had been a well-respected religious leader. He could have been considered a leader of men. But instead, he says people should regard us as servants, as stewards. We like to identify ourselves in many ways. I like to consider myself and think of myself as a husband, a father, a son, a brother, an uncle, a friend, a pastor, a Christian, right? These are all ways that we identify ourselves, the early things that come out of our mouths when we're in a conversation with a new person. But what should we see ourselves as? My aim today is that you would see yourself as a servant. We are servants of Jesus Christ. So why take a full Sunday morning service to point out our role as servants? Well, there's two things that I think we have natural tendency towards that I think can be destructive. We have a tendency to choose rather to be served than to serve, right? We would far rather have people spend time serving us. Who doesn't love to be served? I don't know if you've ever gotten the privilege of being on a cruise ship, but there's a lot of benefits to that. You don't have to cook meals. Someone cleans your room for you and even puts towels into the shapes of various animals, right? That's fun. People put on shows for you. They check in with you. They take you places on excursions. They wait on you. 24-hour room service. You can get a cheeseburger at 2 a.m. So that's what everybody needs, right? So we love the idea of being served. We call it paradise, right? It's paradise to be on a cruise in these beautiful environments, have people waiting on you, bringing you lemonade while you sit on the beach. Man, that's the life we want to live. But that's not what we're called to. And our desire to be served is evident from the beginning. Have you ever had the privilege of seeing your kids or children argue over which one has to go get up and do something? We have, occasionally we'll have a remote sitting on our on kind of our fireplace thing. It's a end table. And it'll sit there, and sometimes we'll have nephews and nieces and teenagers and different people around, and one of them might say, hey, will you go grab the remote for me? And the other one's like, why don't you get it? Then they argue back and forth over who's going to go get the remote. Now, some of you, Jordy, this might be a surprise to you, but back long ago, the kids used to have to be the remotes. So you'd have to run up to the TV every time to change the channel, right? And so if I'm watching a football game and we want to watch something different, I'd say, Jordy, can you go run up to the TV and change the button? Because remotes weren't even a thing. Addie has her mouth open. So that was shocking. But we would argue in our house, there's a phrase that, hey, since you're up, right? That's a real common thing. Since you're up, can you go do this thing for me? Since you're up, can you like go do the dishes for me? We have a desire to be served rather than to serve. We make light of it, but it's something that is troubling. That's not how it should be. And here's the second thing that concerns me. I see this, see both of these things in my own heart. I want you to be so aware. We tend to view ourselves as those who volunteer our time rather than those who steward God's time. And when you do that, anything that we do, we see as this great gift of volunteering our time, when in reality, all of our time is God's and we are just stewarding it. We're just using it in a way that would be glorifying to Him. We are servants and stewards of God's energy, talents, and resources. When we participate in serving, we can appear quite noble, forgiving of our time, but we really need to quit thinking that way. It's not about how we spend our time. It's about how are we spending God's time and His energy and His resources and His talents and His treasures, because it's all His. How are we living out our call to serve one another? So this leads us to Mark 10. We'll talk through this passage. Mark 10, verse 35, the Bible says, "And James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came up to him and said to him, 'Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you.'" That's kind of a good tactic. Try to get the person to, before telling them what you're asking, if they would just agree to do whatever we ask of you, that would be helpful. And he said to them, "What do you want me to do for you?" And they said to him, "Grant us to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left, in your glory." Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you're asking. Are you able to drink of the cup that I drink of, or to be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized?" And they said to him, "We're able." And Jesus said to them, "The cup that I drink, you will drink. And with the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right hand or at my left is not mine to grant, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared. Now, when the ten heard it, they began to be indignant at James and John. And Jesus called them to him and said to them, "You know that those who are considered rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. But it shall not be so among you. But whoever would be great among you must be your servant. Whoever would be first among you must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." So there's a few key components, and we won't be real long today, but there's a few key components that we want to look at throughout this passage that gives us insight into our roles as servants. The first thing that I want us to notice is the request. There's a request that goes on here from James and John, and the request is, "Exalt us in glory with you." Right? He says in verse 37, "Grant us one to sit at your right hand and one at your left in your glory." We want to be as close to you as possible. We want to be with you, exalted in glory. Those would have been coveted positions, the idea of being right at the right hand and the left hand of God exalted. The disciples' request makes total sense in a lot of people's minds. I thought of the quote by Wayne Gretzky that says, "You miss 100% of the shots you never take." So you might as well take a shot at seeing if God will let you be the ones at his right hand and left hand in glory. One could call them ambitious, or maybe they're opportunists. They would make great Americans. If Jesus would have said yes, there could have been a story written on these disciples of a rags to riches, them going from being fishermen to being exalted with Jesus. You could picture the headline of "Poor ambitious fishermen become second in command over all the kingdom," right? It would be a cool story. But there's problems with their request. There's selfishness evident in their request. Being with Christ and being with him, and they're thinking about their own position. There's a measure of pride or a greedy heart that's kind of deep in their hearts. But I think one of the biggest issues with what the disciples, what James and John specifically were requesting, is that they failed to see the beauty of Jesus condescending to us. They were failing to be a follower of Jesus in that moment. See, Jesus had been condescending all throughout the book of Mark up until this point. We see him serving people, and we see that constantly from Jesus' life. We see him feeding and serving and healing a boy who's got an unclean spirit, and helping this rich young man where he's, again, teaching the implications of the kingdom, and he's serving people, and he's dealing with the rejection and the pain that comes with that oftentimes. And in the midst of seeing this example of Jesus's service, the disciples respond by asking to have these coveted positions at the right and at the left of God. They weren't wanting to serve in that way. They were wanting to be exalted at the very least. They failed to see the beauty of what Jesus was accomplishing. See, it's crazy. You know, we think about Jesus taking time out of his day and energy and what he had such a brief period on this earth to heal a boy. And the condescending that took place, and even an adult man to take time to interact with this boy during these historic or ancient times. But really, the condescending of Jesus, where he stooped to a low estate, happened before that, in that he would ever consider to be man. That God would ever for a moment consider robing himself in humanity to bring about the salvation of the world. That Christ had deserved such high exaltation, and yet he brought himself to be so low. He humbled himself even to the point of dying on a cross in a shame-filled way. The disciples identify Jesus as glorious because they wanted to sit next to him in the moment when he's reigning and ruling, but they didn't understand that to accept Jesus' way would be a way of servanthood. Asking to be exalted is far easier than serving. I think we're guilty of this in our own lives. We often are looking away to find, we're guilty of looking ways to find around true service. And so I think about this as it comes to just even our preferences. When we look for a church, we're looking for a church that checks every box with people who feel or look like me. And we often make it ceasing to be about, we allow it to cease being about what we can provide to the body of Christ and more about what this could provide for me in an experience of sitting in the pew for an hour. In our marriage, we can often pursue a spouse that makes us happy, and that's a good thing, and our spouses do often make us happy. But so often, God uses our marriages far more to bring about our holiness. And our being holy is far more important to God than our idea of being happy. Both of those are good things and can be used for good, but sometimes God uses our marriage to just make us holy, to teach us to serve, to teach us to care, to teach us to invest in one another. We want relationships that speak of Christ and that proclaim the gospel, but often we don't like to put in the work. We don't like to serve in those relationships. We often look for easy paths and run from what it means to serve. Now, being a part of a church family should be a good gift, and being a part of a marriage and a relationship, all of those things should be good. But if we're simply in these types of relationships to draw benefit from ourselves without ever serving the other one in the relationship with you, if we're parenting or grandparenting with the idea that we're going to be served rather than to serve, man, that's a false perception, and it will be destructive. The path to being like Jesus is a path of service. So we get the response from Jesus here in verse 38. We had the request, now we have the response, and Jesus' response is, you don't know what you're asking. You don't know what you're asking. Are you able to drink of the cup that I drink or to be baptized with the baptism which I have been baptized with? You know, it's so interesting. Jesus, all the things that he was about to endure, and he was about to stand before the wrath of God on our behalf, and when he asks them, are you willing to go through what I'm going to drink of the cup that I'll drink, to be baptized with the baptism that I received, they look at each other, it seems, and say, yes. As if they had no idea maybe what they were signing up for with that. Jesus would go on to say that the cup that I drink, you will drink, and the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right hand and at my left is not mine to grant. It's for those for whom it's been prepared. You know, the cup usually means something allotted by God, and so this cup that they were to drink of would have been something allotted by God, allowed in their life by God, and the baptism expresses Jesus' solidarity with sinners, according to J.R. Edwards, with sinners and his willingness to bear their judgment before God. So Jesus was the one who was going to stand before the wrath of God one day, and the disciples would be benefactors of him receiving that cup and being baptized with that baptism. They would be associated with Christ. But what they were asking seems to be that they were asking to be exalted with Jesus, and he's saying, what I'm doing you can't do, but you will benefit from what I'm doing. Jesus is reaffirming that we are to follow him as servants. We followed him in serving, and we follow him in suffering. Jesus doesn't allure them to serve and suffer by the promise that they'll sit on his right hand in glory, but he calls them, and by extension, he calls us to follow by exemplifying what it means to serve and to suffer. We follow Jesus not because he will glorify us. We follow Jesus because in his presence is joy. His value is infinite. He is worth far more than anything. We follow Jesus out of a servant's heart, out of thankfulness that we would be accounted with him. So in Jesus' response, he's identifying that they've missed something. So we have the request, the response, and then the reaction. In verse 41, it says, "When the 10 heard it, they began to be indignant with James and John." The reaction of the other 10 doesn't really seem to be a godly anger on the surface. Perhaps it was, but from my reading through the text and looking at it, it doesn't seem to be, but it seems to be that they were angered that James and John would ask this request and exclude them from it. That they would want to be exalted with Jesus. Because one chapter previously, they had just been arguing over who would be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And so now James and John took this opportunity to kind of get their hat in the ring first. I'd just like to have my request on the front end. We were all arguing over this, and I don't want them to get to it first. So then the other 10 are frustrated that, man, you asked before us. You get the sense that they would have liked to have promoted themselves potentially to that role. And that's a common thing within our world is we don't lack self-promotion. We don't have a lacking of people who want to be exalted. What we lack in our world is servants. That's what we lack. We lack people who are willingly pouring themselves out to people. If you want to be different in the world that you exist in, your occupation, your job, your interactions with people, be a servant. Because that's not common. Too often we reflect the culture, and social media and different things can reveal in many of us the desire to be made much of. Everybody becomes their own brand, and we can make much of our brand on social media. That's delusional. It's self-promotion, and it's not for the cause of Christ. Romans 12:10 does encourage us to be competitive with one another in one way, but it's not in pushing through each other to try to see who can get exalted. It's actually to outdo one another in showing honor. That's the way that we are competitive against one another. Man, I want to be more honoring to my wife than she is towards me, and she wants to be more honoring towards me than I am to her, and that's how we kind of compete, so to speak, with one another. And that should happen in all of our relationships, that we seek to show more honor to each other. The disciples were not happy. They were angered about this. They were not seeking the honoring of one another or the honoring of Jesus. It seems to be that they were frustrated. They were not exalted or thought of to be exalted first. I'm not picking on the disciples, so to speak, because that heart is within me often as well. And if we take long enough to look inside, right, our own hearts and minds, that's there for us all. Here's the fourth thing and the final thought. So we had the request, the response, the reaction, and the reversal. The great ones serve greatly. In verse 42, it says, "And Jesus called them to him and said to them." So now he's gathering all the disciples, and it seems like we need to have a meeting because you guys are missing something here. "You know that those who are considered rulers of the Gentile lord it over them, and the great ones exercise authority over them, but it shall not be so among you. For whoever would be great among you must be your servant. Whoever would be first among you must be slave of all." The great ones among the Gentiles, they lord their authority over people. They love to be considered great and powerful and mighty. They love to show how much authority they have, and they love to use it. Man, if I could just use my authority each day to make my life better or my name more prominent, that's how many of the unbelievers would lord over things today. When I first considered this topic a few years ago, it was interesting. It was in the wake of these stories of politicians who didn't follow their own executive orders during COVID. So they had made executive orders, and then they didn't abide by the own orders that they had made. And so they loved lording their authority over others, but then when it came time for them to be accountable for their own decisions and laws and orders that they had made, they were nowhere to be found, right? And that's how an unbeliever, somebody apart from Christ, would live, that they would like to put their authority and boss people around and tell them what to do, but they're not servants. We call them civil servants, but often we can miss that. Here Jesus reveals a mystery. To be great, you must become lowly. The great ones among Christians are servants and slaves to all. I think we would quickly state that we would love to be great in whatever way, that sounds like a good thing. To be great, be a servant. Jesus, the greatest being to ever be, the God-man himself, he was great and he condescended greatly. He made himself low. So that's what we aspire to as a church. We aspire to servanthood, to love our spouse as a servant, to love one another as servants, to forgive one another because we're here to serve. And if we can forgive and they ask for forgiveness, we forgive because we're servants of Christ and servants of one another. We humble ourselves because we serve, right? And it takes humility to serve. We honor one another by our service. We seek good for one another by saying, can I help you? Can I serve you in some way? Let me do that. We strive for unity in the body. And in part, we do this by serving one another. So how could this be true? What is the basis for this at the end of the day? How do we know that the path to greatness is through servanthood? And we've already alluded to it, because Christ himself came to serve. And this is really the grounding for his whole point. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. Who do you think you are, right? If Jesus came to serve, who do we think we are that we would be too good to serve somebody, right? If Jesus himself, the God of the world, the one who all nations and tribes and tongues will bow before, if he was willing to wash feet, shouldn't we? That's not to be harsh or critical. This is really, again, my own, like, man, what is it in me that would grind against service? Because if I'm going to be like Jesus, then I should be a servant. With all of my time, with all of my treasure, with all of my talents, with all of my resources, I should serve. The most glorious being has stooped down to serve his lowly created beings. How much more should we serve one another? I have a couple of thoughts, just by way of practical application. If God leads you to do whatever he's leading you to do in your relationships or with others, that's great. So take that. I don't want to in any way prevent what the Holy Spirit is doing in your own heart and mind, and so do those things. I also want you to know that within our current church body, there are ways to serve. Our mission as a church is to be dependent on God's Spirit and gifting, equipping us to share the gospel and to serve one another. And we have ministries in Jackson that some are a part of, whether it's something like the Interfaith Shelter or the Center for Women, or we do things like OCC that you could be a part of. We have other ways of how we consider serving through, whether it's adoption or caring for widows or shut-ins or whatever. Any of those ways of serving would be, man, just amazing gifts. Amazing ways of honoring others. But in your bulletin, I shared a form with you. It has some of the ministries of our church. Again, whether it's helping out with kids or youth, or serving shut-ins, or helping in worship, or welcoming people, right? These are all things that we do tie back to Scripture. We need people who care and love and are willing to pour themselves out for others. This is not in the advance of anything other than the cause of Christ is our goal, that Jesus would be glorified. And so I would encourage you, will you take that insert and will you fill out that form? Will you consider ways to serve? If you have a different way to serve, right? Many of you are already involved in so many ministries, and maybe the concern more is you'd neglect your family. Don't do that, right? But if you have a way to serve that God has been leading you, can I encourage you just to fill that out and to give it to an usher in the back? There's no peer pressure or anything with that. If you'd like to just take it home and pray about it and seek the Lord's face about ways you can be a servant, if there's ways outside of the church that you'd like to serve or are interested in, and man, I'd love to talk with you about those things. That's amazing. I would like you to consider, how am I serving? That you would consider, whether it's ways listed there or ways apart from that, that you would be considered a servant. My question isn't how much do you serve or what I don't really care to follow up on any of that, but my desire is to ask you, are you defined by being a servant? Could you describe yourself as Paul did, as a servant of Jesus Christ and a steward of his ministry? Let me read one final two verses here, then I'll close. 1 Peter 4, 10 to 11. He says, each of you should give us whatever gift you have received to serve others. As faithful stewards of God, of his grace in its various forms, if anyone speaks, they should do so as one who speaks the very words of God. If anyone serves, that they should do so with strength God provides, so that in all things God may be praised through Jesus Christ. To him be the glory and power forever and ever. Amen. My final encouragement is, as you consider a life of service, perhaps that's what you've been doing. And I just encourage you to not be weary in well-doing, to continue to serve. Perhaps you've served somebody and it's not worked out for you, and you've said to yourself the phrase, no good deed goes unpunished, or something like that. And I encourage you to be faithful, to continue to serve as God would have you. And he will use it to glorify himself. John Rock.